Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents Sports Talk Saturday.
Don't tell me. We're about to go over a huge waterfall.
Yep.
Sharp rocks at the bottom?
Most likely.
Bring it on.
On WGR.
Oh, yeah!
Sports Radio 550.
Like Cusco falling off of a waterfall, so comes in another Sports Talk Saturday. Sharp rocks at the bottom? Most likely. Derek Kramer here with you. No Joe Cali today. Evan's on the board. We've got ourselves a beautiful group of guests today. Brian Kozy will be on in just a couple minutes. We'll have Pat Hammer on to talk about the weather, as the impact may start shifting toward the north and into the south towns. Such a weird sentence to say, but oh well. But for anyone that's in the southern tier right now, obviously, I hope everything is going well. Yesterday, it did not look very. It didn't look very nice outside. So if you're in the southern tier, drive carefully. Obviously, if you don't have to drive at all, please don't. And then, of course, at 1 o'clock, we'll have Alex Braske joining us as Bills 49ers will take center stage this weekend here for you tomorrow night in Sunday Night Football. But first, Thanksgiving has just come and gone. And I thought of two things. One, the disappearance of Black Friday, so to say. I mean, I'm okay with it. I mean, I never liked the whole people waiting outside of a store at 4 a.m., you know, the morning after Thanksgiving, or like even people waiting on Thanksgiving evening for stores to open up. Like, I typically kind of hated that sort of thing. I also worked in retail, so I definitely hated that. It was one of those things where if I saw you sitting out there, I would probably just start laughing at you. But then I thought of this. Well, Thanksgiving actually happened. Seeing as how Black Friday was a little less like people stomping on each other and throwing bows and become more internet dominant, I decided on, hey, Thanksgiving has just happened. The leftovers are there. I can't wait to go home and get some. But what is the one food that you see at a Thanksgiving or any place that makes you decide you want to throw up a side of these hands for free? What's the food that you see, be it Thanksgiving or anything else? You tweet at us at Derek Kramer 49, at WGR 550 as well, to the station for this, for the opening band. What's the food that makes you decide, hey, I'm going to give you a side of these hands? And for me, that's always been cranberry sauce. Cranberry sauce is always the one that I go, get that out of my face, or it's going in your face. And you're not going to like the style in which it goes in your face. For me, it's cranberry sauce. I'm perfectly happy with a Thanksgiving spread. And I think I'm going to have... I just pulled in Zach Penkew as he was walking away from his shift at WBEN for this. So I'm going to have him sit over at... I'm going to have him sit over at that mic and go into this opening band here with me. This is the loosey-goosey version of the show. But, Zach, I was just saying to everyone here, Thanksgiving has come and gone. What is the food dish at Thanksgiving that makes you decide, I'm going to offer up a side of these hands?
What is that sweet potato dish with the marshmallows on top? Is that a sweet potato casserole?
I think so.
Yeah, it's that. Hands down.
Yeah. Hands down, you're throwing hands.
Oh, absolutely. That is the one side dish that I will actively go get seconds and maybe even thirds of, depending how much I filled up on the other food.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey, so, obviously.
You're thinking the different context. For me, it's the angry version of, if somebody offers me cranberry sauce, get that out of here or it's going in your face. The violent reaction. Like, what's the food at Thanksgiving table that upsets you?
I would actually agree with you on the cranberry sauce.
I have never
once went for that. And I don't know why we call it a sauce when it's a gelatinous blob that's in the shape of a can.
Thank you.
When have we ever considered a sauce gelatin?
We are opening Sports Talk Saturday hating on the cranberry sauce. And I'm okay with this. Exactly. It's not a sauce. It's like, it's this jelly. And like, by the way, if you bring it to me opened from a can, you're getting a can of whoop ass.
Have you noticed, it doesn't matter what household you're in, that is one of the last dishes that anybody touches, and there's always leftovers of it.
Yes,
always.
Because it's never good.
You see one or two people, maybe above the age of 50, maybe even 60, I'll push it, we'll go for it.
My father asked me to grab cranberry sauce at the grocery store, and I did it, but I felt ashamed.
Sorry,
like,
Dad.
I was so...
They were all out. I couldn't find it. We should have got
to
it 3 weeks ago.
It's so popular because it's actually sauce. No. Yeah, get that wannabe Jell-O out of my face. It's not a thing that I like. It is, like, I don't need it. I love Thanksgiving. It's one of my favorite days of the year. And I hate that Christmas typically overshadows it. But cranberry sauce, that's one I'm like, I'll slap it out your face. Or I'll slap it out of my face. Get out of here. I can't do it. I cannot see it. I don't want to smell it. Like, and if you have it with a can of cranberry sauce, like, I was ashamed I had to buy that.
Have you ever tried a whole cranberry?
No.
Don't.
So it's as bad as cranberry sauce.
It is so bitter.
Okay.
I can't imagine anybody actually enjoying that out of their free time. Like, my fiance loves cranberry juice. Don't know what it is. I drink some and I feel like I drink alcohol. My throat is dry. My tongue is shriveled up. I am sick.
This is the fun that we're having now. Like, we're kind of actually catching fire with the opening band to the point where we're going to get connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Joe in Niagara Falls, you have a question. You have a take on the cranberry debate.
It's the cranberry jelly in the can, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the cranberry sauce is made, like my niece makes it, with an orange glass of orange juice baked together and that's your sauce.
Joe, I cannot. I unfortunately can't make out your audio there. Turn the radio down in the background, actually, and I'll try to get back to you in a couple seconds here. I just put you back on hold. Like, turn the radio off in the background. I heard that, and I couldn't really make out what you were trying to say there. So we'll try in a couple of moments. Like cranberry sauce for me, it's like it again. The fact that I had to buy that in a can, I felt shame for my family because I was asked by my family to get it. Like, it's tough.
I will say it is aesthetically pleasing to see the ribs on the can or from where the can was because it makes perfect slices for it.
Yes, that is something to behold. All right, Joe, we're going to try you here again. All right, let's see what we got.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I've got you loud and clear now.
Okay. Now, that cranberry in a can, that's not cranberry sauce. That's cranberry jelly. Now, my niece makes a cranberry sauce with an orange juice and orange zest made in the oven, and it's actually a sauce. It's very good. But you have to like cranberries, I guess. But that stuff in a can, that all is jelly. That's all that is.
Yeah, Joe, I appreciate that. Thank you for joining in here on the band. I appreciate that. But while I got you, what's the one Thanksgiving food that angers you to your core?
Sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes. Okay. I can respect that.
I just don't. When that stuff with the marshmallows, forget that. I don't mind a roasted sweet potato, but that stuff, not that casserole. You know,
that's... Taking direct shots at poor Zach PenQ over here.
You know, Joe, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that you've never had a good sweet potato dish served to you. So it's okay.
I want a marshmallow. I'll make a s'more, all right? The graham crackers and the chocolate and the marshmallow. That's sweet potato.
Joe, I appreciate the call. Thank you, man. Have a great day, and I hope your Thanksgiving was as good as ours. This is the fun of the opening band. It's great, and it's getting gets the listeners involved now as of late. So I'm here for it. I'm here for getting the fans connected, even with the silly topics like the opening banter. All right, Zach, I got work to do. We got to get to Brian Kozeal in a few moments here, but thank you. I appreciate you joining here last moment as I literally waved you in from the hallway.
Well, you caught me at the right time. I was about to head to a press conference, so this is
oh, perfect. Go to work. Get going. So get things going. Get your job going. I got work to do. You got work to do. We all got work to do. But that's Zach PenQ from our sister station, WBEN, on his way out to a presser, doing his job. Proud of you, buddy. Hey, you know what? We like to have fun here. That's what we do. And in a couple moments, we'll get back to business here with Brian Kozeal joining us in a few moments. As the Buffalo Sabres take on the New York Islanders tonight in, I don't want to call it must win, but it's a you got to have it win. The Sabres are infuriating this year with the inconsistency that they show on a week-to-week basis. But the problem is that even with their inconsistencies, all they have to do is be good enough in a division that is poor. A division that is, if I try to use what I really want to describe it, I'll get myself in trouble. But it's not good. The Atlantic is trash right now. There are two teams that have established themselves with relative safe positioning. Florida and Toronto of all teams. But the rest of the division is up for grabs. Even Toronto is only at 28 points. And the Sabres are sitting here at 24. So I'm not going to go ahead and pretend that the entire Atlantic division isn't up for grabs. It is. This division is clearly a mess this year. And when you look at the Metropolitan, for example, staying within the Eastern Conference, the Devils, the Capitals, the Hurricanes, they all have 30 points. They're all well established as the clear-cut teams that are going to win the division spots. 1, 2, 3. It's going to be a matter of what order are they going to be in. Meanwhile, over in the Atlantic Division, yes, I expect that the Florida Panthers will steady themselves up. But no team in the Atlantic has 30 points yet. The Boston Bruins are in this race with minus 19 as a goal differential. And I bring up the Bruins because I have Brian Kozeal on with us now on the Western Hotline. Brian, it finally is starting to happen. The demise of the Boston Bruins is now not over-exaggerated. It might be time.
Good morning. Yes, for a decade, and I know I've said it with you before, I've been the guy that's like, well, who can this? If the Sabres are going to make the playoffs, they're going to have to pass somebody in the division or two. And I usually always say, well, the Bruins have to come back at some point here. They're getting older, and every year they burn me, and they, you know, obviously, what, 2 years ago they had the record or no, yeah, the record regular season. So, I mean, it doesn't make sense to pick against them. But this is the first time that their offense has really, really looked poor. That's, for me, is the spot that I'm really, really seeing a dip in the Bruins. If you look at their goals for, they have 58. Tell me in the East who has less goals scored.
I'm looking at it. No one.
Yeah,
and if we look at the entire league, it's Nashville, Anaheim, and Chicago.
I know. I mean, if you would have said to me, like, okay, start rattling off the bottom scoring teams in the East, like, you just, your brain wouldn't think to start or list the Bruins in that group. Like, I would think Montreal, Ottawa. I might think the Islanders. I might even put Philadelphia in there. I would not get to Boston. I might put the Blue Jackets. Like, you know, these teams I'm rattling off first before I would get to Boston. But the Bruins are dead last in scoring and goals, in terms of goals for. They're a minus 19. So, again, what are some metrics that we usually look at to determine how good is a team over time? And one of those we always look at is goal differential. And the fact that the Bruins are a minus 19, like, that shows to me, like, maybe they're not that good this year. Maybe they can be gotten. I thought Tampa maybe would be the team that would come down more, and it still possibly can. I mean, we're only a quarter of the way through the season here, but I think from what I've seen through 23 games for the Sabres, I think a very realistic goal can maybe be that they finish third in the Atlantic. I think chasing down Tampa and Boston this season should be in their sights, and when they play, and when they've played their hockey that they're supposed to, that Lindy Ruff wants them to, I think it's fair to say that if you think the Sabres could be the third team in the Atlantic, I don't think that's outlandish to say. I know it's probably silly to say because they haven't made the playoffs in 13 seasons, but I think just watching the other teams in the East, I don't think Detroit's any better. I don't think Ottawa and Montreal definitely are not better. I think of not only is making the playoffs, obviously, I think the first goal, but I don't think there's any reason why you can't set your sights on finishing third in the Atlantic. I think that would be something that the Sabres can do if they stay healthy and get good goaltending from Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, which they have so far.
Brian, of course, like you mentioned, the targets that you have to have here. This year, it really does look like all you have to do is be better than the rest of a bad division. And that's the key here. Are the Sabres good enough to be the best of the rest of the Atlantic? I'm thinking Florida stabilizes themselves. Toronto probably goes ahead and Toronto's their way to the playoffs like they do every year and then choke in the playoffs. But the rest of the division, it looks like it is a free-for-all in the truest sense for not just third in the Atlantic, but of course those two wildcard positions.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, not only does it open up that third spot, which I didn't think was obtainable, to be honest. I didn't think maybe that would be where they were at this year. But we, using Thanksgiving as a benchmark, as you guys have talked about the stat before, you know, what, almost 80% of the teams that are in a spot come Thanksgiving time end up staying in that spot. So Buffalo's right in that mix. And you look at the wild card teams right now. Now, I do think the Rangers will figure it out, but the Flyers, to me, should be a team that the Sabres can be better than. They're holding a wild card spot, 1 point better as of this moment. I mean, look at the teams that are right behind the Sabres, the Blue Jackets, the Red Wings, the Islanders, the Penguins. I've seen better from the Sabres than I've seen from the best of those other teams this year. So I think it's good to be optimistic. They're still not in a solid spot, though. So a quick tailspin, and they could quickly be in ninth in the East in the wild card race. So, I mean, that's something that would be obviously something that would set them back, but they also could be another three-game win streak away from being in third in the Atlantic, and who knows, you know, you could start setting your sights on Panthers and in the Maple Leafs. I think long-term, Florida and Toronto, I agree with you, are going to be the top two teams in the Atlantic Division, but I think setting their sights are there. I like what Lindy Ruff did. Yep. I just remember from even way back when I was before I was hosting, which, geez, we're on 16, 17 seasons now, when I was in the locker room during Lindy Ruff's, you know, first tenure as coach, helping out Paul Hamilton in the room, they would have a NHL standings. At the time, it was like a whiteboard, kind of a magnet. You know, obviously now they've got a little bit more advanced than that, but you would see where they were. Now, obviously, back then, the Drury, Briere, Ryan Miller teams, they were excellent. But They brought that back into the locker room this year, and Lindy Ruff talked about it's another piece of accountability. It's another thing to remind them of what our goals are and where they are, and, hey, if you have a slip-up, look what can happen kind of thing. So I like that he's brought that back. I think it holds them accountable. There's no reason to be warm and fuzzy and coddly about them not being in the playoff race. Like, that's not a good thing. Like, show them. This is the goal. You need to be here. And, you know, when you walk by it, it's a reminder every day that, hey, I gotta take this job seriously kind of thing. Not to say they don't, but you know what I mean. Like, it's another reminder of that. So I like that he did that. I love how he's stressed about, hey, when you – every – you know, good teams are going to lose a game. You just can't let them pile up. And for the most part, since he's kind of brought that up as a focus for his team, they've done a good job of that as well. So even yesterday is a game he knows they didn't play perfect. He knows they didn't play 60 minutes. But he said, look, we figured out a way to get a point. He goes, we had the opportunity for two. He goes, that's going to happen over the course of the season. We have to pile up those games too. The Islanders last year had 16 loser points. The Sabres had six. That's a 10-point difference right there. And guess what? The Sabres missed the playoffs by 10. So, I mean, that can be a huge change up there if you start to pile those up. They only still have two, but yesterday was a game in other seasons with another coach. I'm guessing they just lose that game 4-1. Instead, it's 3-1, and they come back and make it 3-3. And, you know, as Vancouver was dominating overtime, I'm like, geez, if they could just get this to a shootout with how good Lukanen's been in them, you'd think you'd like your chances. Obviously, they didn't get that far. But still, yesterday, to me, I would call it a slight win in the sense that you didn't play your best. You played a good team. You had a two-goal deficit in the third, and you figured out a way to get a point in the standings. So those are the games that I think are meaningful for this team to keep themselves in this race and keep themselves, hopefully, when they get into a position to a playoff spot, that they're able to keep it.
And not to mention, Brian, the other part of it is how you ended up in that two-goal deficit. It was another bad penalty, bad penalty situation, a crucial penalty in a crucial time. It's tied at one halfway through the third period. Cousins goes off for a double minor in something that was inexcusable, but Cousins himself is given the opportunity to get it back, and he plays like a man possessed to end the game, help the Sabres after the hole that he dug them in. And it kind of shows that even this year, they've lost games like that, where we've seen Dahlin take a bad penalty against Florida and the floors came out from under them, or, you know, something like that. We've seen this team take big penalties in bad situations where they've lost games this year alone out of that, and they managed to find a way to gain a point out of it last night.
Yeah, and for the Cousins piece of that, I mean, he takes the holding call. You wouldn't like him to do that to start with, but then he takes the unsportsmanlike. Lindy said afterwards, listen, I told him, I let him know how I felt about that. I was a little surprised that he put him back out there. But then he explained, he said, look, I told him, look, the only thing you can do to make up for it now is to go get one back. And then he obviously goes and gets that really nice goal with that shot. Like you said, a man possessed. And then he goes and gets another one. So credit Cousins for responding in a spot of adversity for sure there. I still was like, geez, I'm surprised Lindy's putting him back out there since he's Mr. Accountability for penalties guy. But I want to credit Cousins for responding. He figured it out. Good for him. He was he obviously was the top reason why they were able to get a point. They have to, as a team, stop taking so many, I would call them, careless penalties. These are not penalties where you're hauling down a guy on a breakaway that's maybe saving a goal. These are not penalties where you're sticking up for a teammate. I know Paul always says about that, like, hey, you stuck up for a teammate, good job, now go kill that off kind of thing. I think a lot of these penalties are just careless and poor decisions, and in some sense, you'd say kind of these, it's the stick penalties. It's the hooks and the trips that if you were just in the right position, or maybe you take an extra half stride, the penalty ends up going away because you're in the right spot that you need to be. So, and it's not just Cousins. Dahlin, we know, has been bad at this for sure. Owen Power has been bad at this. Zach Benson, who has been one of my favorite players this year, in my opinion, sometimes I think he gets the rough end of the call, but he finds his way into the penalty box sometimes too many times. That's the only negative. I mean, Zach Benson, it's, you know, to me, he's had an A game. The only reason I wouldn't say A plus is that he finds himself in the box sometimes too many. But the Sabres' best players are doing this. It's not just one, it's the captain leading the way doing it. So they have to figure out a way to stop that. That's going to come back and bite them. It already has a few times here and there. Because they just spend so much time penalty killing, or you have your best players not on the ice when you need them to be, the lines all get jumbled up because you spend 6 or 8 minutes of a period shorthanded. So, you know, all that leads to those other things that kind of pile up. So I think as a team that's still, you know, if you said to me, like, what are still major things that need to be corrected with this team, I might put that right near the top of the list, is just stop the needless penalties, the careless penalties that end up putting you behind in periods. And, you know, last night that obviously was an example. I think they've got to feel very fortunate that being down 3-1 to a very good team, that they were able to get that game to overtime last night.
Brian Colsey on the Western Hotline. Sabres Islanders tonight, 7:30. The Steve Foley Law pregame show will start at 6:30 here on WGR. Brian, Cousins and how he managed to help wrestle that game to overtime and atone for his mistakes, I think he's been playing a lot better as of late. The last time I had talked to you, you said it was more of a snake-bitten thing and not out of an effort sort of issue. Not that effort needs to be called into question, but like, he was taking the most shots on the team when we had last spoken on this show. He's now looking like he's finding his game. He's actually getting the production to go with it. And I think him and along with Jack Quinn starting to gain some confidence, Bowen Byram, Alex Tuck, seem to be guys that are trending up for me. Am I missing anyone?
No, I think that's right. I think for the first month or so of the season here, we were seeing emergence of these new players. And I think partially was because, Derek, we were, you know, not getting much from the Sabres' third and fourth line for a long time. And now you saw Ryan McLeod contribute. Jason Zucker, I think, has been very good for this team in all facets. 5-on-5, 5-on-4, 4-on-5, all those sort of things. I think he's been excellent. Face-offs. This team, by the way, is much better at face-offs, for those of you that value that. Late in games, yesterday afternoon, they have that 6-on-5 situation. They won 3 out of the 4 draws in the Vancouver end. That saves you 20 seconds every time. So they're much better at face-off. So, you know, that's something that's been improved. But Quinn has been noticeably better. He still hasn't scored on a goalie this year. At some point, like, what is going on there? I thought healthy-wise, could he be capable of scoring 30? Maybe. I don't know. But I also want to be hesitant to say that he's going in the wrong direction, because he did come off 2 extremely serious injuries. And for as much as he's officially back, is he all the way back? That's something that I guess only he could answer. But he's been trending much better these last 2 weeks. He definitely has been skating at a better rate. I think he's been moving much better. He's shooting the puck at a much better rate too. I think he was passing up opportunities to shoot earlier in the season. So whoever is getting to him to shoot more, I think that's working. It's got to go in at some point, right? I mean, we said it about Cousins, volume and just being in the right spot at the right time. Like, hey, it's going to go in for it. Well, it has for Cousins. For Quinn, it has not yet. His only goal is in an empty net situation. So that has to be better. If he's going to be on this team, he has to be better. He obviously is not going to score 30 this year, but he has to get his production going. At some point, like, results do matter when you're playing in the NHL.
Yes, exactly. And speaking of results, a couple players that I've wanted more from lately, probably my favorite Saber right now, J.J. Paterka. He's been cold as of a little bit these past couple games. Out west, he wasn't much of a presence without Tage Thompson in the lineup. I do want to see a little bit more out of 77. Who's a player that you look at and you go, I need a little bit more from you right now?
Ooh, good question. Paterka is a good answer to that question, to be honest.
I think it pains me to say that.
Yeah. He yesterday had one, again, toward the end of the game, a one-timer against Minnesota. He had one in the final minute.
Yes.
Kind of went off. I don't know if it grazed Gustafson and the post, or just Gustafson and then it hit the back of the net. Remember, like, when he was on the side there?
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I feel like he's got 7 in 21. I mean, it's 1 every 3. That's not, you know, that's okay, I guess. 7 out of 21, you know, but I still feel like that could be better. I mean, 7 out of 21 over 82 games. That's 27 goals. Would we be okay with that for Paterka? Just under 30?
I mean, if he's got the balance and point production, you'd like to see it.
I guess that seems all right, but...
But even then, he's gone cold all over the last four.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's more of a streaky kind of thing, I guess, right? I guess you'd say we're looking for a little bit more consistency there. God, I mean, I know we just talked about it. I want to go right back to Quinn. Like, I need more there.
Yeah.
I definitely need more there. I need more production. There. Yeah, that's got to be better for them to have more balanced scoring lines now with how they've adjusted it. I wonder where Lindy Ruff ultimately wants to have Ryan McLeod fit. Because right now he's centering in that fourth line group with Malenstein. So I'm not sure ultimately if he feels like that's the best spot. McLeod thrived when he filled in for Tage Thompson when he was out during those games. And I feel like McLeod is a guy that maybe should be playing up with in a different role with better, more skilled players. But right now, the way he's got the line set up, it's McLeod kind of centering line four, which is interesting. So I'm wondering, I don't know, have we seen him even disappear over the course of these last few games since Thompson's been back because McLeod's been in a different role? Maybe. I wonder kind of how that's going to shake out. But I still think my answer goes back to Quinn. I need more production there for sure. He's got to be better offensively. He's got to produce more. He's on this team to be involved heavily offensively. So I'll still go back to that answer.
All right, Brian. 7:30 tonight against the Islanders. Steve Foley-Law, pregame show with you and Paul Hamilton at 6:30. Can't wait.
Yeah, looking forward to it. The Islanders also played yesterday at 3. Ironically enough, they also played at the same time. They also went to overtime. They also lost in overtime to Washington. So they come in essentially with the same game effort yesterday, the time spent, the travel from Washington to New York, similar from Buffalo to New York. So in terms of us thinking about back-to-back and everything that goes into that, it should be pretty even. Because they both essentially played the same game yesterday, and they both essentially had the same travel yesterday. So that piece of it should be a wash, which means you might still have two tired teams. And as you know with the Islanders, if you give up the first goal, are we going to be staring at another 1-0 game for the entire afternoon or entire evening? Who knows? I hope not.
Yeah, please not tonight, for our eyeballs.
Yeah, tonight's cliche of scoring first matters, Derek, might matter even a little bit more. Because the Islanders would, if they get that first goal... And they're like, well,
they'll be happy to lock it up.
Yeah, we don't have a lot in the tank, so let's just shut this down and try to win 1-0. That would be painful for all of us to watch. So maybe even more so tonight, you know, getting that first goal. I know I hate saying that because it's so cliche, but like tonight it feels like a little bit has a little bit even more value than it normally would.
And hopefully we get that from them. Brian, it's good to talk to you, and we'll do this again sometime soon.
Thanks, Derek. Have a great rest of your show.
Thank you. Brian Koziol on the Wester Hotline. Sabres Islanders, 7:30 tonight. Steve Foley-Law pregame show with Brian and Paul Hamilton at 6:30 here on WGR. We are way late to the break because I decided to make everything go into one segment. We're going to go to a break and come back with a real quick one here. This is WGR.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
At the blue line, Benson holds it. Power now makes his way in tight with a shot off the bar. Oh, that beat him. That beat him, but it hit the bar and comes right back out. Another shot, scores! Tie game, 3-3, Alex Tuch.
A double tipper. Cousins deflects it, Tuck deflects it, as it was awarded to Alex Tuck ultimately after the game. That tied this one up. The Sabres do ultimately fall in overtime, though, to the Vancouver Canucks. 4-3 yesterday at KeyBank Center. That one stung a little bit, you know? That was a... I think it stung because of the fact that, like, they had one chance in overtime. That was it.
They were just hogging that.
Vancouver had the puck.
I was just saying sometimes what I don't like about 3-on-3 hockey, but at the same time, I do like it. I don't like it because the team can just literally, if they don't see it, they could just go out of the zone and reset.
I hate that.
But also, it could possibly lead to 2-on-1s, breakaways. That's what I like about it, and there's a lot more open space. But I think I don't like it when a team will just hog the puck and do nothing with it.
So that's the thing, is that possession is 9/10 of the law in 3-on-3 overtime. But I think there needs to be something done about it. And really, for me, it's just...
Shot clock?
I don't think you should... No, not a shot clock. I just don't think you should be able to pass it to the goalie from the offensive zone. That's it. If you want to keep control of it in the neutral zone and use the goalie to help buffer it and get line changes or something like that, that's fine. Because then you're at least trying to create fresh legs for both teams to have a chance to attack. I think you just should not be allowed to be like, oh, I don't see the look that I like in the offensive zone. I'm kicking it back to the goalie. That should be the part that we ban from 3-on-3 overtime hockey, because that is what's killing the game. That's what's killing the high danger and the speed of it. Lo and behold, hockey coaches have found ways to once again just straight up murder a neat concept, because they did this with 4-on-4 in the past as well. So I just, you have a chance to keep a cool thing cool, and you just decide not to keep it being cool.
It's crazy because the Sabres outshot the Canucks in overtime. The only shot that the Canucks got like on goal was the one that went in the net.
And again, possession's 9/10 of the law there. Like, you were getting very nervous the entire time. They had a couple of great chances, though, that they missed. So I'm not going to go ahead and discredit the Vancouver Canucks, because they had great opportunities. They missed a couple of those chances. One was a really good look that went wide. And that actually led to Buffalo's counter. And that's the thing, is that you also have to be precise in 3-on-3. If you miss the net, that's when it can turn around and a team can find its counterattack on you. And Tage Thompson had a beautiful look right there all alone in the slot. He puts an extra move on. He can't get the puck over the glove of Lankinen, and it just, that one hurt. Especially because you saw them claw back and win the game, and you're like, all right, no matter what, just find a way. And they found a way. And you're like, ooh, can you get one more? I'm happy that you got one, considering where you were halfway through the third period. But can you steal the last one? And they couldn't. But this year, the Atlantic Division is so bad. All you have to do is be the king of the crap pile known as the rest of the division. The Boston Bruins are currently holding on to a playoff spot. 25 points in 25 games. They are not a good team. And it's funny, Brian and I talked about that. And we've texted about this. Like, the Bruins are starting to look shaky, and him and I texted each other a couple weeks ago about it, like, oh my God, it's finally happening, Brian. You finally got your shot. You called it, and it finally is happening. So I was very excited to see that. The Boston Bruins are just, they're not a good team. I think Tampa might be better than their current point standing right now. So maybe third in the Atlantic is still going to be a tough fight. But you should be getting into one of these wild card spots. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Find a way. Like, most of the times that I think about this team when it comes to avoid losing streaks or making sure that you get the points when Tage Thompson's out of the lineup against a very bad pair of teams in California. Find a way. If the Sabres can keep finding a way this year, they will make the playoffs. It's not going to be pretty. Here it is. Ready? We're going to have a very difficult year with them, because they are not a good team. They are okay. Unless they can turn it on, this is going to be a dogfight for the whole year. And you have to be ready for it. That's all I have to say about that. You can't worry or go into despair if they lose a hockey game. There's 82 of these suckers.
We're in it for a long haul, and it's not going to be pretty all year. You have to look at trends. You have to look at streaks. You have to look at everything in context. You can't go roller coaster like a football game. Try to use context. Try to use nuance. I know they haven't made the playoffs in 13 years. But it's going to drive everyone some form of insane if you try to base the season off the results of every single game. You can't do it. Don't do it. Save yourself that trouble. It's going to be a long haul. It's going to be a tough run this year. But the Sabres are categorically good enough to get a playoff spot this year. That is the big deal here. It is not about them being better than anything. It's just about being good enough. Can you be good enough to get a wild card spot? Can you be good enough to take third in the Atlantic? We'll have to see. They've only played 23 out of 82. We've got a long road ahead. We don't know what's going to happen. The bottom could fall out. Or they could find form. Or they can do exactly what they're doing right now, which is staving off long losing streaks and staying in the fight for as long as humanly possible. And if that's what it's going to be like, how they're trending, we're in for a long year. Booty Cheek of the Week coming up next here. Sports Talk Saturday rolls on. Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR. This is going to be quick because I've got Pat Hammer of WGRZ joining us at noon here. And it's not nice to kick a man while he's down, but Matt Eberflus, man, I feel like you wrote, you basically laid out your own tombstone for you. Like, that was some of the worst coaching. And Antonio Pierce is doing pretty much the same thing. So I think it has to be just as loud. But a lot of these coaches, man, they make simple too complex in these late game situations. And to see the Raiders and the Bears do the same exact thing while having a chance to upset one-loss teams is kind of funny. Because I look over here in Buffalo, and yeah, sometimes we criticize Sean McDermott for late-game scenarios. Do we really have it that bad? Not really, I guess. It could always be hilariously national televised worse. But yeah. Eberflus got fired for not using very much a timeout that was there for him. The Raiders made baffling decisions as well. NFL coaches, you get the Booty Cheek of the Week. We're back in just a little bit here as we go to Pat Hammer, because I'm looking at blue skies here in Amherst, but I know that the Southern Tier got rocked yesterday. That storm likely to start moving up toward our area here within the Buffalo region and the South Towns and in Orchard Park, New York in particular. We'll get the latest from Pat Hammer. What's it going to mean for Sunday? And, well, what's it mean overall for everyone's drive this weekend, especially with people visiting over the weekend for Thanksgiving? We'll talk to Pat about that and more coming up next. Sports Talk Saturday, Derek Kramer here with you. You're listening to WGR.